This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. My first guest today is Keith Long. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Patsy.
Keith is a fantastic ghostwriter and for personal stories, for executives, and he can just take anybody's life and turn it into an interesting and fascinating book. So, Keith, tell us a little bit. How long have you been ghostwriting?
Well, thank you, Patsy. And I do want to say to start off that you deserve an award for bringing the benefits and the resources of writing to the public community here throughout the world, really, because your show reaches so many people. And a lot of people are not aware that what a ghostwriter does is take the personal story that, and everybody, I like to say, has a personal story, and writes it professionally, and through that process of collaboration is able to communicate things that the person, I'll call that person the author, didn't really realize themselves until they worked with a writer and collaborated with a writer. And so what a ghostwriter does is really bring out not only the story that everybody has, but that ghostwriter brings out elements of the story that even surprise the author.
So I think it's a lot of fun to be a ghostwriter. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit, not at the level that you do. I mean, you are quite amazing. You've had such an amazing output over the years. And I think it's fun to work with somebody and to hear their story. And I know that what you try to do is capture their voice so that it is something when at the end they almost feel like they have written it, because you get right into their nature, their personality.
The secret is that when I work with somebody, and incidentally, I should mention that the public may know or they may not know that celebrities typically use a ghostwriter. People that are very successful in one form of business or the arts.
So you mean Kim Kardashian doesn't write her book?
that's a spoiler alert. Not only that, but Sarah Palin was memed on Saturday Night Live, and she has a ghostwriter for her book, as does Pamela Anderson and Gwyneth Paltrow. Leslie Nielsen, the late actor, Terry Bradshaw, the quarterback. So, in fact, I saw a statistic this morning that up to 60% of the nonfiction New York Times bestsellers have a ghostwriter. And it used to be that a ghostwriter was kind of looked down upon, and it was hush-hush, and that was more cultural than anything else. And as the culture becomes more open, and the internet makes conversation and communication more easy, what happens is that you just bring out a lot of things that people used to not talk about. And so all of these great writers that, nonfiction writers, let's say, that people read, they didn't have any idea that they had a ghostwriter. They saw their name on it, but somebody else was writing it. And so to me, it's all good. You bring this up and you find out that the average person can have a story that they would like to publish and have people read. They just don't have the time, the resources, or the experience to put it down in writing. So they can hire a ghostwriter. And the ghostwriter does that professionally so that reviewers and the readers and the general public say, wow, this is really well written. And they want to read it. They want to read the next page. And so a ghostwriter really is somebody that foregoes the attention, the public credit, and gives it all to the author, and really communicates what otherwise would never be communicated. So it's a great resource that I encourage people to consider and to use And as far as cost is concerned, it's only pennies a word to have that. And of course, with Amazon, you can upload it, you can publish it for nothing, literally. You get an ISBN number, which costs something, but just upload it, and as soon as people buy it, they pay you, and you get the money.
So it works. It works out so well for both the author and for the ghostwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you first meet somebody and they say they want to hire you, do you ever find yourself like you've taken on a job and you don't like the person or something? Has that ever happened?
No, it's never happened. And it may be
you
my
sort
own.
Of pre-screen them?
No, I really don't. I take I guess I do. Yeah, I guess I do without realizing it. There are in part of my interviewing process when I talk to a client, I just talk about them and find out what they're all about and what they're trying to accomplish. And there are occasions when I don't return calls and don't follow up on it. So I guess that is screening. But most of the time, I have another hat as an investigative journalist, and I've published for Harvard as an investigative journalist. And part of my approach is to have an open mind and to balance the narrative. And so, for example, I'm ghostwriting a book currently for a very successful CEO, very successful, well-recognized nationally.
And not Donald Trump.
No.
Okay.
And what I do is I record a conversation with I'll call him the author. And what I've discovered, and I learned something new on every project, what I've discovered is that he and I can talk, and that's fine. I bring his son in, who's a part of the business, and I let them go at it. And they say to each other, well, do you remember this? Do you want to talk about that? Things that I'm not aware of. And so it's all about getting to know your client, getting to know the author, and as a person, and finding out what it is that prompts that person to share what he really wants to write but wouldn't think of without that probing, without that intent to get that out of him. So in this particular case, I want the son, who has different perspectives. He has a generational perspective that my client, the older man, does not have. And of course, they clash a little bit, and they work that through, and they decide what they want to talk about. The son, on every occasion, says, I didn't know that about you. And his wife said, I didn't know that about you. And the people in his office, as they hear about it, they say, I had no idea that this is how the company was founded. I had no idea that this is what you did when, you know, at this office location, and so on and so forth. So it's a real process of getting to know the person and also letting other people involved in the process to get to know him as well. And ultimately, the reader finds out about him, and this particular individual knows Tom James or Raymond James. He has lunch with him regularly. In fact, he called him up from one of our recessions and said, I'm fact-checking this event. What do you think? And, of course, Tom James is a very famous entrepreneur here locally, and he has all of these connections. He has several governors on his board. He's fact-checked things with them, found out, you know, corrections that we make. So it's a great process for everybody concerned, and that's really one of the services that a ghostwriter does for a client. And so when you think about a ghostwriter, try to get one that wants to know you as a person, is interested in you as a person, and works to get the most out of you.
Well, I see that it combines all the things that for example, I love investigative research. I love doing research.
Mm-hmm.
I could spend all day doing research on any, you know, subject. So when you have a nice client that you could do that research, and then really getting into the history, because when you're taking a story and you're going back in time you have to know about the 50s, you have to know about the 60s, or whatever era the person is, you know, grew up in or talked about. So
yeah, for sure,
it's fascinating. I think it's a fascinating field.
He goes back and talks about this particular client, talks about Hubert Rutland, who was very famous here locally with a bank and a clothing store in downtown St. Pete, some of the development of St. Pete, the St. Pete Times, some clashes he had with the Times, and the also the regulators in Tallahassee. And so it's quite an adventure.
Now, when this book is completed, your name will be on it. This won't be one with your name on it.
Yeah, I'll be on Pure Ghostwriter.
Pure Ghostwriter. Because sometimes now, as you were saying, some books now have.
To me, I leave it up to the what I call the author, my client. He can include me and say he's the author with me. He can give me an acknowledgement on the forepage. I wish to compliment Keith for his help in writing this book, or he can do nothing. And as far as I'm concerned, none of that affects the cost. I'm not interested in
The fame.
Yeah.
More in the fortune.
Right.
In this case, if you have to choose between fame and fortune, sometimes it's nice to
easy choice.
Very easy choice. So, you know, I think it's a great job, but as you know, there are some famous authors, by the way, I know, who have ghostwriters and they don't admit it. And that really annoys me. And I had the opportunity to interview a very famous novelist, a best-selling novelist, who hasn't written a book in years. And I'm thinking, what am I going to ask you? Because I know you didn't write that book, you know. And it would be embarrassing from my point of view to do it. So it's a funny thing. Now, when you know, you've any clients that you can talk about, because of course most of your clients you can't mention their names.
Well, I don't, as a courtesy. They really, I have a non-disclosure agreement, which typically the client requests and provides, and it's really just private information that they're concerned about, and that is covered with that. I just, as a courtesy, I don't promote the fact that I wrote a book for a well-known person, or even a person not so well known, just as a courtesy. And I see my role as a ghostwriter, and they ask a ghostwriter basically so that it's their message. It's not confused with somebody else. For example, if I publish a book that's very successful and it's on a subject or with a point of view, because I am an investigative journalist, that they don't agree with, they may find it conflicting with their brand to have me associated with them. Because as an investigative journalist, you know, I just let the chips fall where they may. And I tackle all kinds of subjects. So I do that as a courtesy.
Yeah, I can see that. That's the best policy, because then you never know who. One client might say, well, you've done a book about a Republican, and I'm a Democrat, I'm not going to hire you.
Absolutely.
And or vice versa. And so you have to sort of play it.
Not only that, but I had my own radio show many years ago called What Women Know and Don't Tell Men. And that was, it had a point of view, I'll just mention, in support of women. But there may be people out there that disagree with that. And so they would not hire me. They say, I don't like his point of view. I'm going to look somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so being a ghost means being ghostly.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
And very, very mysterious. So that's fun. Of course, as I said, to be a ghostwriter, to be a good ghostwriter, as you are, it really takes a great talent to capture that voice and to make it a page turner.
I can tell you that I get inquiries from clients in all kinds of professions, with all kinds of stories. I've completed in 2015. I completed a book for a major law firm in Australia. They have a very famous environmentalist as their spokesperson. They don't mind me saying that. We just have that kind of a relationship. But it's a law firm story, and they're very, in some ways, controversial in Australia, and they're very direct in promoting their brand. And so I've written that for them. I also have a client who's a children's book author for 4 to 7 year olds. It's a 32-page illustration book, and so that has no controversy. It's about a turtle that explores under an old house and meets a mouse who becomes a friend, and they discover, in this case, Massachusetts. And so that's her story, and I become part of it as I ghostwrite it.
Oh, that's fun. That sounds like fun. It's a nice, diverse subject matter. You can go from business and children's book, and I understand that you're going to be talking to a lawyer's group pretty soon.
Yeah, Thursday at the Bellevue Biltmore, I'm talking to the Pinellas Bar Association. And that is a subject that I won't get into here, but it's two very controversial trials. And I look at the jury process, who acquitted the defendants in those trials, and they were both very hated defendants. But the jury acquitted them. And it's a long story on how I got involved with that, but I have a CLE, what they call a CLE certification from the Florida Bar, continuing legal education for attorneys. So I educate attorneys, they get credit for that, on these subjects. And that's my investigative journalist hat that comes into play. And, you know, I have a lot of clients as a ghostwriter, like the one I mentioned in Australia, but others more locally, that ask me to write for them as a ghostwriter. And attorneys, I don't mind saying it, because attorneys love adversarial opportunities, and they're very typically not very good writers. And so they benefit from having somebody as a ghostwriter. So a lot of my clients are attorneys, actually.
Well, that's okay, so, and that's coming up. Now, how do people contact you if they're interested in having their story written? How do they get in contact with you? And as I said, you know, people might think that it's too expensive to do, but it's not. I know that you know, that when you look at what you can get from it, and the joy of having a book, as you said, here you're doing a book about a company, and and it's something that that story should be preserved. And if somebody doesn't write the book about it, if the person doesn't write it, it'll all be forgotten and never known. And so it's fascinating. I think if you have a story in your family, a story about your business, it's a great thing to write this book.
Indeed.
From a historical perspective, from a family perspective, it's something that your family will treasure forever. And I think it's wonderful. So how do people contact you?
I just ask them to check me out on LinkedIn. My name, Keith Long, after the LinkedIn introduction, LinkedIn, and then the /in, and then / Keith Long, and they go right up to my webpage.
And from there they can contact hook up with you. And you know, if you have a story out there, something that you want preserved, and something, or you have an idea, something you want to promote. There are so many, you know, people who have causes and ideas that they want to promote. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to work. How long would you say people work with you before you come out with a book? It depends, I suppose, on the story, huh?
It can be from 3 or 4 months to a year, mm-hmm. depending on how long they want to invest in the process. And also, I do press releases. I'm a member of steering committee of the Tampa Bay Press Club. And so I do press releases for businesses as well, both locally and internationally, actually. So I have a lot of connections. I networking. I spend a lot of my time during the week just networking, just schmoozing with people.
Well, great. And when you, I was just going to say, so people can contact you, and mm-hmm. I think that's the best thing to do. Yep. Go to LinkedIn and contact Keith Long, and get a story out there. Get your book out there. It's fun. And
Pennies a word, I like to say, is really the truth of it.
Okay, pennies a word. And we should mention that we met through
Bay Area Professional Writers Guild, a fine writers organization here locally. Most of them are nonfiction writers. I think there's some fiction writers involved as well.
So if you are a writer, you should look into joining the Bay Area
Professional Writers Guild.
Professional Writers Guild.
And they can contact me and I can reference them.
And Keith can send you the instructions on the meetings. They're once a month at Panera's, which are always fun. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to connect with other writers and just get that whole networking thing, which is so important as part of a writer's platform nowadays.
It's so funny. One of the writers in that group, I asked her, she's writing children's book, and she was at the Madeira Beach Library recently with a signing. And
I know that, Sue Kutchman.
Yeah. And I asked her for help. I said, I need some advice on this children's book I'm writing for my client in Massachusetts. She says, I know Tom Lyons, who owns a bookstore in Massachusetts. Have her talk to him. So I sent that.
So this is the joy of networking. So contact Keith Long and get your story out there. And I want to thank you so much, Keith, for coming in today. It's a great pleasure to talk to you. And always look forward to seeing you at the meetings.
And I hope everybody listens to Joy on Paper every week.
Oh, thank you so much, Keith. Thanks. Bye-bye now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. On January 30th, when best-selling author Tim Dorsey will be signing autographs of his latest adventure, Coconut Cowboy. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. And they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back, and I'm waiting for my next guest, Meredith Marin, who has written an intriguing book called Why We Write About Ourselves, 20 Memoirs on Why They Expose Themselves and Others in the Name of Literature. Now, Meredith is up in New York City, and we're just waiting to get through to her. Luckily, the snow has been cleared away, and I think everything is moving along up there. So as we're waiting, I just want to mention, it was really great to talk to Keith because Keith is a ghostwriter. So if you don't have the time, if you can't write, It's a great way to go to get your book done is to hire a ghostwriter. And if you can, but if you can write, it is wonderful to just sit down and write your own story. And so I'm really excited today that I'm going to talk to somebody, a great editor and also an author on her own, to talk about what it means to write your memories. Okay, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Meredith. Welcome to Joy on Paper.
Thank you.
Okay, I was just before you, I had on a ghostwriter whose job is to write stories for people who can't write themselves or don't have the time to write. But in your case, of course, you're a famous editor, and you've edited this fantastic book, which I really love the format of it, and it is called, I'll repeat again, Why We Write About Ourselves, 20 Memoirs on Why They Expose Themselves and Others in the Name of Literature. I love the layout of the book. You have 20 people that you've interviewed, that you've asked this questions to about why they write. And what I like so much is in each of the stories, each of the interviews that you've done, you have not just the answers to the questions that you've asked, but you have all the sort of vital statistics right there,
right,
and the collected works. And that's so useful. I really like the layout of this book.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I was trying to make a book that would be not just a good read, but also of use to people who want to write, but also people who love to read, because I think it's, you know, it's hard to understand an author without the context of her background, where she came from, what school she went to, what she does for a living, and then also, you know, the collection of her works or his works.
Exactly, and I know that when I pick up like a collection about different writers, if I don't, if the information wasn't there at my fingertips, I would look it up because I have to be reminded, what did they write? When did they write
it?
And so that you put everything, I think it's very clever, really clever.
Oh, well, thank you. We try.
So, and you did a great job. Now, of course, you're an editor, you're a writer on your own, and then you got into this, this whole interest in memoirs. Now, most people don't quite understand the difference between a memoirist, somebody who writes a memoir, and a autobiography. So do you want to just explain quickly what that is?
Sure, yes. It's a question that I had to look up myself when I started answering questions because I didn't actually know. And the difference is mostly between an autobiography is more of sort of an academic book, the kind of book you might read in college, and it's meant to be, a factual recounting of a life. In other words, chronological. You know, I was born on a dark and stormy night, and then, you know, when I was six, my father left, blah, 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 like that. And it's generally speaking more factual, less emotional, and a memoir is really a work of literature. It's a work of art. It's a book to read for pleasure, for interest, general interest, and some memoirs are about a whole life, but many, many memoirs are about one incident in a life. For example, in the book, Darren Strauss wrote a book called Half a Life, and the opening line of his book is, "Half a lifetime ago, I killed a girl." And he wrote the book because he was in a car accident, or he was driving a car that killed a teenage friend of his when he was a boy, and when he was twice as old as that, as he was when this happened, he needed to go back and look at what had happened and, you know, kind of come out in the open about it. So his whole book is obviously not just about the moment of impact in the car accident, but, you know, it does focus around one particular episode.
Well, you have the 20 that you've chosen for this book are an interesting collection because they go from quite a different variety of people and talking about different subjects. I know one of the ones I found fascinating was Pat Conroy, who wrote, of course, everybody has heard about The Great Santini. And The Prince of Tides, which was made into a movie. So when you did these interviews, did you go and meet each of these people?
Some of them I met. I was I live in Los Angeles, and so some of them I was able to meet in the area where I lived, or I traveled to see them, and others I interviewed on the phone.
So now on Pat Conroy, this is his works are very, very deep, very very hard hitting. And I what is his reason for writing his memoirs? What did he say?
Well, he's really one of the more controversial figures in the book because he, you know, there's kind of this debate among memoirists and those who read memoirs, and some people feel sort of like anything goes, and Pat Conroy is one of those. He actually lost his relationship with his sister, which he's very sad about, and because he felt that writing the true story about his father and his family was more important than protecting his sister's feelings. And, you know, that's a controversial move, and he did it knowingly, and he has regrets that he's not in relationship with his sister, but he also has no moral compunctions about it. He said it was totally worth it and that he would always choose the writer over the material. You know, in other words, it's more important to have a book out about a dysfunctional family with a raging father so that other people can read that book or that story and feel comforted and know that they're not alone than it is to protect the feelings of one person. But I found him, of all the writers, to be one of the very most warm and personable and generous and kind. He's just a wonderful guy.
When, when you selected these writers, one of the ones that I thought was, I had read his story before, I had read about his story. I had not actually read the book until I read your book. Then I went and I got his book because I wanted to see, what you brought up, and that's Ishmael Bey. Is that I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yes, you are.
Bey, yeah, and of course this is a horrific story in many ways of his childhood in Africa, and it's horrific. But then I read the book, which is even more horrific than what you've written about here. What was the feeling when you talked to him?
Well, Ishmael Bey, for those who don't know, was a child soldier in Sierra Leone in Africa. He was recruited when he was 11 or 12 years old, as was happening a lot at that time, that there was civil war and the rival army would come into a village and just basically take the children. You know, they'd take the boys. I don't think they took the girls. And Ishmael Bey was one of those soldiers, and so he wrote his own book, and then I interviewed him about the aftermath of having written it, because there was also controversy where he was accused of exaggerating or lying about some of the details of what happened, and he maintains that everything he wrote was true. But, he says he wrote it for a combination of reasons, which was, you know, his own personal sort of purging the memories of the hideous things that he was forced to do as a child soldier and losing his country. You know, he was very lucky, as he says, that he was adopted by a family in New York who took him in and sent him to school and so on. But, he wanted the world to know that this was going on and continues to go on in some parts of the world. And he also wanted to kind of exercise his own demons.
And, it was important for him to write his memoirs. It was important for him to get this sort of out, and I suppose in many ways it's cathartic to bring it out and to talk about these things, because it was not, some of the things that happened and some of the things that he did were not nice. And, of course that comes through in many of the memoirs, that they're talking about things often that are very, very painful, not just to themselves, but to the people around them.
Mm-hmm. And also, one thing that most of the writers said in common was that when I asked them, you know, if you're writing about yourself and you're writing necessarily about other people in your life, how do you keep from basically being a jerk? You know, how do you keep from just making the reader feel that you're writing a revenge memoir? You know, you're just trying to get back at someone or try to make yourself seem better than someone else. And they all pretty much said that, you know, the rule of thumb is that you have to be the worst character in the book. You know, that if you're going to take on anyone else's flaws, you have to really look into your own. And I think that's kind of true in life as well. You know, when we start blaming other people for everything that goes wrong with us, it's not a very good path for anybody. And, you know, when we start to feel that someone has wronged us, if we look at our own part in it and what we can do to change ourselves rather than trying to change other people, you know, that's a much healthier path. So, you know, that's really the key, I think, for most of the stories in the book, that people realize, yes, other people had wronged them in various ways, but certainly with Darren Strauss having, you know, killed a friend of his by accident, you know, he definitely had to look at his own part, too.
And, of course, sometimes bringing out these stories or telling these stories can be devastating. And I know one of the stories you mentioned is Islet Waldman.
Yes.
And and she explained what she wrote, and as a result of what she wrote, she had a lot of, you know, hate mail and people angry with her.
She was attacked on Oprah, on the stage of Oprah. She had women screaming at her that her children should be taken away from her. Yes, because she wrote an essay that was published in the New York Times in the Modern Love section about how she loved her husband more than she loved her kids, and how parents should protect their romance and their marriage while, you know, protecting their family. And, oh, my God, it was so controversial. And, yes, so she doesn't regret having written it. And she also went through a very scary period in her life because people didn't agree with what she said.
Oh, so it can be a very difficult decision to make for a memoirist, too.
Yes, and I've made those decisions myself. I've had a lot of negative fallout from having written memoirs, and I've also had people write me and say, you know, what they used my book for and how it was helpful to them or their families. So it's really difficult. You know, you're kind of playing God in a way. You know, no one writes a memoir just about herself or himself. Everybody is involved with other people in one way or another, or many ways, and those people are just going to be in your book, whether they want to be or not, and it's very, very challenging.
Well, you know, speaking of course, you wrote a memoir that actually became quite famous and quite controversial, which was called My Lie, and so is this where you became sort of involved in wanting to talk to other memoirists, other people who wrote their memoirs?
Yes, I've published several memoirs or sort of hybrid books that are part memoir, part journalism, and My Lie was one of those. I wrote about having accused my father of molesting me as a child and then realizing later that it wasn't true, and reconciling with my father and making this very public apology in the title of the book, My Lie. But it was also, I really wanted to explore how could I have come to believe something that so horrific that, and then find out it wasn't true. And so I went back and talked to other people I had been associating with at that time in my life, which was the 80s, during a kind of period of mass hysteria in the country about child abuse and child sexual abuse, and was trying to correct the problem that children were being abused and sexually abused and that no one was talking about it, and that's what was allowing it to go on. And some of us got a little overzealous about correcting that problem and went to the other extreme, which was kind of seeing a molester in almost every man, and that's what happened to me. So, yes, it was a very horrific experience for me and my family to go through, and having written the book, you know, some people, I actually had death threats myself from fathers who felt they had been falsely accused by their daughters or sons, and you know, I had death threats from women who, well, I won't say death threats, but I was very much, you know, blamed and raged at by women who were molested and felt like I was bringing doubt on their stories, you know. So it's very difficult. It's difficult to tell the truth, don't you find? I mean, you know, at dinner conversation, let alone in a book.
Well, in this book, that in the new book that you've written, which I think it's really a very useful book for writers and, of course, for readers who are looking for some depth into their own lives, to mm-hmm. understand their lives. And so why we write about ourselves is intriguing. And I like one of the suggestions. I can't remember which writer suggested that you start by writing it in the third person. And that's sort of,
yes,
That sounds like a good idea to me. So it's sort of,
well, you know, the thing that many of the writers in the book say is that when you sit down to I think it was Ayelet Waldman who said that, and she also says just write it the first time. Don't censor yourself. Don't think about, you know, your mother reading it. Don't think about it being in print. Just write your story the way you have to write it, and then you can fix it later so it's not offensive or hurtful, or maybe it will be offensive, but presumably not hurtful. But anything you can do to kind of distance yourself from the story is actually helpful, because, you know, then if you don't do that, then it's a journal, you know, then it's just your diary. And if you are trying to make a story out of some life experiences that and a story that will be helpful and of use to other people or to society, then you have to have some distance from it. You have to look at it and say, is it really that interesting that I bought a new washer dryer, you know? Or will somebody get something out of it if I hurt my family by saying that I, you know, falsely accused my father of molesting me? I mean, these are the kinds of questions we grapple with every day. What really matters and what's most important and, you know, What good can all of it do? What good can we do as writers?
Well, I wanted to talk about one of the writers, and because I had always been an admirer of her work, and it's Sue Monk Kidd, who, of course, wrote The Secret Life of Bees, which I don't know, it was on, I think, the New York Times best-selling list forever. I don't think it moved too far from that for like years, and of course. You know, she's written some great things, and for her, writing her memoirs was very important.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She, you know, she told me for the book that what she writes in her fiction, of course, is taken from emotional experiences that she's had in real life, and so at a certain point, she just had to actually just kind of come out from behind the curtain and set it down.
And she suggests that she's one of the ones who suggests just write it down, write it as you think it, write it as it sort of flows into your mind, and then you can go back and decide, you know, if you need to cut things.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not. I mean, I've written fiction too, and when you write a novel, you know, the first draft. As Annie Lamott always, you know, Annie Lamott in Bird by Bird, her famous and really amazing writing guide, she calls them, I'm sure we can't say this on the radio, but let's just say the blankety-blanky first draft. you know, that the first draft is never the final story, and it's the same with memoir. You know, if you censor yourself too much while you're writing it, then you're gonna miss out on some important emotional truth. So it's important to just let it all flow onto the page, and then that's what editing is for, to go back and fix it.
And when when you were working on this book, I would think that listening to some of these stories was difficult, even for you. They are some of the stories are very very painful.
Yes. It's really true. I mean, Kate Christensen, who's a beautiful, beautiful novelist, chose to write a memoir called Blue Plate Special, and she thought she was writing a memoir about food. She's a food writer and an amazing, I've been the lucky recipient of some of her cooking. And, you know, when she was writing it, she remembered that she had been molested by a college or high school basketball coach. And, you know, she had never gone public with that before. And in the course of writing about her life, she realized how much that had affected her. And so she had to tell that story in the book. And that was extremely painful, especially with my own experiences, you know, to listen to that story. And it was painful for her to tell it. But again, she felt it was worth it because other people would learn something from it.
So in the end, when you're talking about writing a memoir, what is your, here all of these people gave their advice, and what is your best piece of advice to people who want to tell their story?
Mm-hmm. I would say, there's sort of two ways to go. One is if you're writing the book because you want to be a writer and you want to be famous and you want to publish a book just to publish a book, I would say forget about it. There are some people who will come to me and say, I want to be a writer. What should I do? And I say, well, what is the story you have to tell? Well, I don't know. I'll think of something, but I want to be a writer. That's not really the way it works, you know. You have to sort of be on fire with a story. You have to know what it is. You'll die if you don't get it down on the page. And, you know, writing is not, a lot of people think that I'm rich or that other writers are rich. And it's like, it's extremely costly to be a writer. I'm not trying to, you know, not play a tiny violin here, because I'm profoundly grateful that I get to write books. It's a real privilege and an honor. But it's not lucrative, and it's not easy, and it's not... It's not the most trouble-free path to take. So if you're going to go through all that, you better have something you really, really need to say, or else it's going to fester inside you. And then once you decide what your story is that you want to tell, you have to give it the reality test of telling the story to some friends or to some people who aren't so invested or aren't participants in the story, and see, you know, if they say, oh, my God, that's an incredible story. I just learned so much from listening to you talk about it. Then there's a chance. But if you're looking over at them and they're trying to stifle a yawn, then you might not have a story that's worth telling.
Well, I think you've written a book that's worth telling here, and a book that I encourage people to get. It's Why We Write About Ourselves, and a story from 20 Memorists, and it's available, of course, on Amazon. And also, tell us, you have a website where people can go to find out more about you. I know you've written, of course, you've written so many magazines, I think, many people have read your stories, probably didn't, you know, sometimes don't connect with magazine writers. I know you've done, you know, Home Journal and People and More, mm-hmm. and Mademoiselle and everything. So what's your website?
My website is MeredithMarin.com, and it's MeredithMarin.com.
Okay, well, I recommend people go and have a look there. There's a lot of connections there to your press kits and your bio. And I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. And it's really wonderful. I believe that people should preserve their memories. I mean, that's one of the reasons I started Joy on Paper, to encourage people to write and to preserve these stories. I know I, as a researcher and as someone who does a lot of writing in history, I appreciate all of the fantastic people who in the 17th century and 18th century, 19th century, wrote down their stories so that we have it for future generations. So
yes,
I believe there's at least one book in everybody. And and so, of course, there are many in you. So again,
well, it's been really a joy to talk to someone as well educated and informed and passionate about books as you are. It's a real treat.
Well, thank you, Meredith. And it's Meredith Marin, MARAN, .com, MeredithMarin.com. And thanks again, and look forward to talking to you when your next book comes out.
And that'll be a year from now, and we'll talk then.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay, that was great. You know, as I was saying, and I've told everybody over and over, the best thing is really to just start writing. You will be amazed what you can accomplish. I'm going to have several guests on in the next few months, people who never ever thought they could write, people who retired from, you know, jobs where they never did any writing at all, and then they realize, well, they don't want to play golf, and they're not going to go sitting on the beach all day, and they just wanted something to do, and suddenly, you know, that blank screen became a friend. They sat down and they started. Some started very slowly with perhaps a poem, and some just started writing letters. And I was talking to one lady who just started writing letters, and then she realized, well, I'm writing all these letters to family all over the country, and I'm trying to make each letter interesting. I want them to, you know about what's been happening with me, and just trying to, actually what she was trying to do is get people to write her back, because the, you know, she was starting to feel disconnected. And next thing she knows, that people are writing to her and saying, oh, I really like your letter. I really like your letter. And do you remember this? And do you remember that? And so she started writing down her memories of her, you know, of their association, like when they went on a camping trip, or when they went picnicking, or when the first time they met. And so she has realized after a while, well, I've got all these letters, and luckily she saved them. You know, sometimes people write a letter on the, you write it on the computer, you print it out and you send it, and then you don't save it. Well, luckily she saved it. And after a few months, she said, you know, I realized I had a little story here. A story that mostly about my youth and about my family, and so she's turning it into a book right now. And I think I've read a few chapters of it. I think it's going to be a terrific little book. And I also have a gentleman who retired and did the same thing. He just started writing, and one story turned into another story, and the next thing you know, boom, he's got a book. And now he's got a lot of books. He just doesn't stop now. So once you sort of get hooked on writing and you see your work out there, you know, you get a thrill. That's what we call joy on paper, that thrill of seeing your words on paper. So, you know, just do it, just start. And meanwhile, if you need a little break, I suggest that you go to Miami Avenue Wine Bar, just off of Gulf Boulevard on Indian Rocks. It's a wonderful place. They have live music on Friday and Saturday nights. You'll love it. It's a fantastic place to just sit and get together with your friends. And if you like dancing, it's a wonderful. It's one of the few places around town where you can actually get up and dance. And get a little bit dressed up, because everybody is having fun there on Friday and Saturday night. So it's really a wonderful place for you to go. It's called Miami Avenue Wine Bar. And it also has an art gallery. And you'll really, really enjoy it. So I want to, this is Patsy with a Z. And I want to wish you all a great week. We've had a little cold weather here, but it's warming up. And so just remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me on Thursday, because I have some wonderful guests coming up at 11 a.m. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And see you on Thursday. Bye.